Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to Lost in the Static, everybody. I am Scott, and with me, as always, is my much grumpier host, Josh Hadley.
Mumble, mumble, grumble, gripe.
Yes, nothing new there. So, Josh, I want sex toys, and I don't want to pay full price for at least one of them. Where do I go? What do I do?
You would go to adamandeve.com. You would use the promo code STATIC, which would then reward you with a free mystery gift, 50% off of a single item, 3 free DVDs, and they'll throw in shipping in Canada's Mexico, which is the U.S.
And also, yeah, okay, there we go.
No, I hit all the points.
You're right, you did. You just confused me there at the end.
With the Canada's Mexico thing?
Yes, yes, you did. It always confuses me. But
there's something new we need to talk about.
We need to talk about some stuff. I'm going to take a couple of minutes. If you're interested in just today's topic and you don't want to hear about the show and some changes that we are doing and some other stuff, then you can fast forward on. We are going to talk about children's television and how it didn't used to. It seems like these days it's talking down to kids versus in our day it wasn't quite so much. But we
will get there.
We'll get there. Let's take a couple minutes here just to talk about Lost in the Static and where we want to go, what our future is. Kind of a meta show, if you will. First off, Josh, I've been bugging you for a while that we're nearly to 200 episodes. This is 192, and so we've got 8 to go.
And 2 months!
And it feels like the show hasn't been going anywhere. It's not that I don't enjoy it. It's not that it's not fun. It's just that we've been doing this for over 2 years now.
Over three years
now, and it feels like we hit a point and stopped. And you and I have had a serious discussion off the air about that, and we've both come to the decision that we want to take the show somewhere. We want to move forward. We want to make this not just Lost in the Static, but 1201 and Geek Juice and a lot of other places. We want to make this an actual business, and I think we've got enough listeners and enough people that have supported it. And listeners brought this to my attention.
I'd never heard of it before.
They want to contribute. They want to help, and that's not just in the way of suggesting a topic or doing research for us or something like that, which we've gotten a lot of listener help on, and it's invaluable. Thank you all for that. But some have wanted to contribute financially and not just one time, like over PayPal, and some want to contribute financially and don't like PayPal or
they want to get something out of it.
Or they want to get something out of it, which
is not mercenary, even if it sounds like it is on the surface.
Right. No, that's perfectly reasonable. So, I kind of presented you with an ultimatum. I was like, we're signing up for this and we're going to do it now. And
I'm going to mispronounce it. So you just say it.
Right. We now are on Patreon,
which for some reason in my head, I always want to pronounce Patreon. I don't, it sounds like a Decepticon, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, oh my God, that could be a transformer that, you know, by day he's an ATM, by night he's a crime fighting
robot. I'm sorry,
robot.
It just, whenever I see the word, it makes me think of a transformer, but right. Go ahead.
But Patreon is a way that you guys can contribute. You're not using PayPal or anything like that, and it's a monthly subscription service. Now, First and foremost, yeah, we're free. We come to you free, and we will remain coming to you for free.
That ain't changing.
But we get about 2,500 downloads per month. Now, that's not just people that listen over Jackalope or over...
Well, that's just the SoundClouds. There's more that listen. We have a monthly audience of approximately 10,000. But that's also from 1201 Beyond, from SoundCloud, from Jackalope, from their archives, and from the live listens.
Right.
So it's a good-sized audience.
It's a good-sized audience. We get at least 10,000 pairs of ears. Now, I'm just going to deal with those downloads from SoundCloud because it's a solid number. It's one that we can track very easily and see. And so if everybody that listened on SoundCloud gave us $1 a month, that would be $1,000 a month to Josh and I.
Which could pay some bills.
Which would really, really help us out. I went through a job switch and haven't been able to find a job that
I haven't paid rent in 3 months.
Pays well. Josh, let's be honest, you're in danger of losing your house at this point.
I need some help, but that's the thing with the, I'm going to say it, Patreon, because that's how I like to say it.
Right.
That you guys get to be involved. That you, we have the different reward levels and whatnot if you choose to be involved. And that's the whole point. You are involved.
Yes.
You're involved in either decision making or working with us, or you have to go to read all of the descriptions, but you get to have some say in Lost in the Static.
Right. So if you go to patreon.com, and that's patreon.com/LostInTheStatic, you'll see what we're offering. And granted, what we're offering right now is kind of what we can afford. And it's something.
Just go there and check it out. It's under Lost in the Static.
Right.
And then if you choose to, that'd be great. If you don't want to, fine.
Yeah. And that's, like I said, if just a fraction of our listeners contributed as little as 99 cents a month, then it would make a huge difference to us. It would definitely, not only could we pay the bills, not only could we assure that you're not homeless, which I really don't want, because I don't want you and your family ending up on my futon. It would enable us to do something with the show, to invest a little money in the show, somewhere.
Some better equipment. And there are things we want to do for the show and with the show that unfortunately cost an initial investment, which we don't have.
Right. We're talking a better soundboard. My soundboard is... 15 years old at this point, at least, if not more. And it desperately needs an upgrade, and that's a couple $100.
My computer just crapped. Literally last night from when we're recording this.
Yeah, your computer is dead. We need to get you a new computer and a new editing system. We need some new editing software. I personally would like to get involved in some video stuff and start doing some stuff on YouTube, including later this summer when I go to Battle Creek, Michigan back.
You and I have already talked about that.
Yeah, I'm getting back into hot air ballooning. I want to do a little video thing with that. And with your computer being dead, we need help with that now. We want to go to conventions. We want to do meetups for listeners. Not, you know, initially here in Wisconsin, eventually here in the U.S. And if things really work out and 1201 takes off like I think it should, then outside the U.S. too, we'll do some traveling and we'll do some meetups, and we're willing to work for it. Whether it's doing something as simple as leaving your outgoing message on your voicemail to sitting down with a Google Hangout type deal.
Well, and there are other more practical ones too that were you as the listener or as the Patreon. Yes,
Patreon.
I'm going to keep saying it like that
because
it's fun.
And I'm going to keep correcting you because I want to go into the right place.
Well, you guys would also have, like I said, a say where you'd get to pick the topic within reason. You would get to, we would record professional, in quotes, commercials for your webcomic, your blog, your radio show, your website, your short film, whatever, things like that. Basically, you could hire us in a way.
In a way. You could hire us and support the show at the same time.
Yes.
And that's what we're doing. That's my step one, because we have enough listeners. We have enough earballs at this point that...
Earballs?
Doing the best I can. We have enough ears at this point that we should be going somewhere. We should be talking to other people, and we should have more presence than we do. And we need to be able to do that, and we need your help to be able to do that.
Yes, we do.
And this is a way that we can give something in return.
Yes, because it wouldn't be you like donating money. It'd be you paying for a service or something along those lines.
Think of it, if even if you contribute as little as $1 a month, think of it as a tip. I enjoy your show. Here's a tip. And by the way, $1 for those in Europe, that's less than a pound. I think it's around 60 pence at this point, if that much. And I think it's about half a euro, maybe a little bit more. If you can spare that a month, you'll make a big difference to us.
And then there's also, we don't get as much of a cut of this because these are expensive, but at 1201beyond.com, there's t-shirts as well. So there's t-shirts for Lost in Static, Radiodrome, what the fuck, there's some bunch of original designs, there's Geek Juice shirts, there's Geek Juice t-shirts, or 1201 t-shirts, all at 1201beyond.com store as well.
And that's a one-time contribution, and it's...
And you get a physical product.
And you get
it.
A physical product, and again, if you go to Patreon and check out our levels, depending on how much you decide to give us each month... then, hey, you'll be getting something in return, too. And again, if you don't want to, that's fine. We're not going to charge for the show.
No, I put my foot down. I mean, you weren't pushing it, but I put my foot down and said, that's a line I won't cross.
Well, yeah, no, I wouldn't do that anyway. It was more of, we need to offer something more for people, and this is a way that we can do that. So, again, just go to Patreon, Patreon.com/LostInTheStatic, and check out the levels, and I appreciate it. Now, that's a good 12 minutes in, Josh. Let's get on to today's topic.
When we were kids, it seemed like when, and I'm going to put the word in quotes, children's entertainment, whether that be a movie or a TV show or a cartoon or whatnot, they seem to, in general, have treated us with a little more intelligence and respect than they do today. The same type of thing, there's always the exception. You got a Bill Nye or something that doesn't really talk down to the audience. But in general, kids' programming today treats you like you're retarded.
Well,
not like a 10-year-old, but you're a retarded 10-year-old.
Exactly. And if you think about it, you mentioned Bill Nye, who to me was always a somewhat sane science education program that didn't talk down to kids.
He had that hard level of educating you while also making it not entertaining, boring.
Right. And then on the opposite end of that spectrum of, I don't know if you remember Beakman's World.
I am familiar with it enough to have seen it on TV and went, what else is on?
Yeah, it was Bill Nye to the extreme because it was a 90s program.
He was playing up an angle.
Yeah, it was scarily 90s. It was like Yahoo Serious tries to teach us science, and it didn't work.
Well, see, the one that I loved that taught us science was Mr. Wizard's World.
Yes.
Play this and see how many people are brought back to the early 80s Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon bringing us the best of Canada's TV for
but see, the thing with Mr. Wizard was he actually did teach you real science stuff, and if you go back and watch some of the episodes, which are all over YouTube and whatnot, he didn't do it in either a boring way or a goofy way. He was sort of, let's have some fun with this, but science is serious, so let's take this seriously as well.
It was kind of like trying to be taught science by your dad, or in some cases,
Don Herbert.
Don Herbert, yes. Okay.
Yeah, and I loved this show. Who the fuck would have thought education is fun?
Yeah. I mean, it was there was a time, and luckily you and I were in school during the switch, but there was a time when science education, number one, my school, because Indiana is Indiana, they had to tiptoe around some of it.
Oh boy.
And you had a lot of creationists coming in, and if we taught evolution, then, you know, school was the devil. And my school, luckily, I hate to sound, okay, I'm going to sound like a dick, but my school, the kids were a little bit more advanced. Even the Christian ones were a little bit more accepting of, you know, science and God can coexist at the same time. And so it never hit my school directly, but some of the public schools in Indiana were slammed hard. They were protested against, and it was,
how dare you teach facts?
Yeah, how
in school?
You know, we didn't evolve; we were created, and the world was created in 7 days, and blah blah blah.
I'm
blah,
making
blah.
A jerk off motion
and
right
so,
now.
And so it was, you know, you had science teachers really on edge, and it wasn't, they never had a chance to do the fun stuff and the fun experiments that you would see on Mr. Wizard's World.
And see, I'm from Wisconsin, liberal state. We're a blue state, and we did that stuff. Hell, the next thing we're going to play, which I agreed with you on, we used to watch this show, Scott, in school. They would show us episodes of this show. Now, let's see if you guys can remember this. This was PBS, I think.
Is this 3-2-1 content?
Well, I didn't want to tell them, but
well,
yeah.
I don't care. It's in the lyrics of the opening show.
I know.
Show.
I wanted them to get it. But yeah, they used to show us these once a week in schools.
Yep, and it has one of the best intros in television history.
It'd be better if you could see it, but...
Along with the scariest children's television workshop.
But before we get to this is from the 80s. From the theme song, you guys are going to be able... You're going to go, did everyone have afros? This is such a 70s open.
I think it started in 78, so yeah, but it
but
held
still,
on to that. Here we go. I'll just play this. Intro.
Well, but then this was, again, it was science and it was some fun and you had your kids hosts. And this is what I'm talking about, the difference between then and now. Now, to get that's the same kind of science, it has to be dry and has to be scientific. If you add fun to it, it demeans the science, Scott.
Yeah. In some cases, I mean, we don't have, I guess the closest we've got is Neil deGrasse Tyson. And
he's awesome.
He does have fun with cosmology and astronomy and the stuff that he covers.
You want to talk controversy, all that cosmos shit with all the religious people now, with cosmos coming back?
Screw them. I'm sorry. I love cosmos. I really enjoy that. But that's the closest thing that we have. And that's a great show.
The Carl Sagan version, too.
Yeah.
Was that PBS also?
That was also PBS.
I used to watch that all the time. Same with Nova. You know, Nova was nature documentaries, and I'm an 8-year-old kid going, wow, I didn't realize the running pig was so goddamn interesting.
Well, I mean, aside from Nova, let's look at David Attenborough and all of the stuff that he did for nature conservation and education. And he made those programs for adults, and there were some kids versions, and I forget the two guys that lived in the zoo, and of course Steve Irwin, he admitted that his shows always had kids in mind.
Well, yeah, he kind of, and I'm not meaning this in a demeaning way, okay? He always had kind of a childlike personality to him.
Yeah, that's
mean that as an insult.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not an insult to me at all. I mean, he thoroughly enjoyed what he was doing. He made it fun. And, you know, yeah, there were a lot of people that made fun of him going, okay, you see, you see that angry croc? We're going to go poke it with a stick. And, you know, yeah.
I always saw him being kind of anti-woman myself, because it was always he'd be talking to the camera while his wife is giving the enema to, you know, to the dangerous crocodile and stuff in the background. And I was kind of like, you want to help, dude? She's like getting her arm bitten off, dude.
Yeah, but no, it's an Australian thing. It's but at the same time, he always had that childlike demeanor, but he made education interesting, and
he had energy, man. My God, did he have energy.
Yeah, and he never spoke down to the audience ever. I he would just be like, hey, look at this neat shit.
It's a literal pile of shit. Yeah,
exactly. Look at this neat shit. It's some neat shit, and here's why. And you know, by the end of the show,
imagine the creature that laid this shit.
Exactly.
I don't even know if that was a good or bad Australian accent.
It was terrible, but you know, by the end of the show, you find yourself then with that same enthusiasm.
That is awesome shit.
That is really. I'm gonna go look for some shit in my backyard.
Ah, it's just dog. What the hell's interesting about that?
But you know, my point is, he never spoke down to the audience. He was genuinely enthused. Bill Nye was genuinely enthused, even though Bill Nye, it's Dr. Bill Nye, if I remember right. I think he's got his PhD in something.
He does.
But they approach this with a passion without condescension.
Which, as you and I were talking about before the show, I never really watched Mr. Rogers, but I know you were a bigger fan. The only ones that I want to go and find, and I'm not fucking with you, he had the first directing job for a famous movie director was on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. This guy who never went on to do a whole lot, George Romero, used to work on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood as a director. I'm just kind of curious to see what George Romero did for PBS, you know? Yeah, George Romero directed for Mr. Frickin' Rogers.
And one of the coolest things, and this is back with my parents or whatnot, but when I was very, very young, I did write to Mr. Rogers. Homeschooling on
early 80s?
I was traveling, and my mom wanted me to write letters to people at home. Well, I didn't have a whole lot of friends at home, let alone those I really wanted to write letters to. And so she goes, well, why don't you write letters to Mr. Rogers?
Did he write back?
I would, every week while we were traveling, I would write a letter about where I was and what I was doing, and basically pick one neat thing that I found. For instance, in Brazil, in Manaus, it was the floating house we were staying on. I wrote about the floating house. In Rio, it was Carnaval and a couple of the Carnaval costumes that I saw, and the fact that I was dancing through the streets of Rio, and a man came and picked me up and swung me around, and I actually got passed around a crowd, and here's my mom.
I'm a doobie.
Yeah, my mom freaking the hell out, because they're just celebrating passing this 5-year-old kid around the streets of Rio, and my mom literally turned around and I was gone.
Did the monkeys take him?
You know, so, you know, but I wrote about that, and I wrote, a couple other things, and my mom saved all of the letters. She didn't mail them from Brazil, but when we got back, she made copies and mailed them off to Mr. Rogers' care of Children's Television Workshop, and they got to him, and he wrote back, and I still have, I think it's a 3 or 4 page letter from Fred Rogers just saying, you know, you're a very lucky child to travel this much. Thank you for telling me about these.
It's interesting.
You know, that's interesting. Yeah. And it was handwritten. He didn't type it. It was handwritten. And it just blew my mind.
The thing with Mr. Rogers is he has this this demeanor that is both good and bad, that it puts you at ease, but it also makes him seem bland and completely milquetoast.
But at the same time, amazingly enthralling.
Before the show, we were watching It's Way Too Long to Play, some like Senate subcommittee hearings for PBS funding from the late 60s.
1969.
And first of all, the senator who was running it was condescending as fuck. He was treating Mr. Rogers like he was retarded. So Mr. Rogers responded as if the senator was retarded. He was talking to him like the same way he would talk to a 10-year-old.
But that's the thing is, I don't think that Fred put on that air. I think he was simply responding the way he would have responded to anybody. Because, and it's amazing to if you listen to that, and it is available on YouTube.
Yeah, it's just way too long for us to play.
Yeah, it's just very long, and it's a Senate judicial hearing.
So there's not a lot of flair.
But he speaks in the same way that he spoke on the show. And it's astounding. And he did cover some pretty deep subjects. Remember, this is TV aimed at 2-year-old to maybe 5 at most.
Didn't he have surgery on one of his shows? Like open heart surgery?
Well, he didn't have surgery on the show, but he talked about it, yeah.
Okay, I remember something about that being really controversial whatever year that would have happened.
Right, but in the 80s, and this would have been mid-80s, there was a spike in divorces in the U.S. It really hasn't come down since then, but basically divorce kind of went through the roof, and so it ended up even on Mr. Rogers' show. And so just as a setup, he was talking to Mr. McFeely, and they talked about Mr. McFeely when he was the mailman on the show. And they talked about his marriage, and then...
It got awkward.
Well, McFeely makes a hasty retreat, and Mr. Rogers talks about why.
Sad. Well, I've got to be going now. Thank you for playing the music for me. I certainly appreciated it.
Well, I'm glad you stopped by, Mr. McFeely.
Good day. Thanks again.
Thanks for telling us about your wedding. Oh, Mr. McFeely left so fast. As soon as we started talking about divorce, I guess that's something he doesn't like to talk about. Did you ever know any grown-ups who got married and then later they got a divorce? Well, it is something that people can talk about, and it's something important. I know a little girl and a little boy whose mother and father got a divorce, and those children cried and cried. You know why? Well, one reason was that they thought it was all their fault. But of course, it wasn't their fault. Things like weddings and having babies and buying houses and cars and getting divorces are all grown-up things.
And you see, that's the thing. He's not condescending. He's not sugarcoating. And again, this is 2-year-old to 5-year-old audience. He's speaking to them in the same way that you would speak to a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old. Yes, he's explaining things in a simple manner, but he's not being condescending about it.
But at the same time, you had look at like an episode. Well, just play the open of this show, which, and I'm not changing the subject. Play the open of this show, and then we'll see if this brings any memories back.
There we are.
Damn YouTube and that repeat button.
I know. It pops up on you when you least expect it.
But like, you can't do that on television. Had an entire episode on divorce, and of course they're making jokes about it. And and you can't do that on television style tasteless jokes about it, but tasteless jokes aimed at a younger audience. This was the only episode in the entire run from the Nickelodeon era that was pulled.
Yeah.
Nickelodeon got so many complaints. My kids watch your show for fun. How dare you talk about divorce? They're only allowed to not watch that show at their dad's house.
Yeah.
You see what I did there?
Yes, yes, I do.
You know, this episode was controversial as hell. These were things you didn't talk about.
In fact, you were talking about the kid that got up in front of the class and
it's one of the funniest jokes. We don't have the clip, but Alistair is playing some new kid in class, and you know it's about divorce. And they're like, "Okay, tell us a little bit about yourself." He's like, "Well, all right. After my mom dumped my dad," and the teacher, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! Don't say dumped. Say divorced." He goes, "All right. After my mom divorced my dad over the side of the boat, we got the insurance money and moved here." That's a tasteless joke, but that's a goddamn funny joke, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And it was that kind of, okay, we're going to make fun of this. And again, you can't do that on television. Why? Preteens, teens.
Yeah.
Usually 20-year-olds if they're high. And it was in Canada, so who knows. Again, we're going to make fun of this. We're going to poke it with a stick, so to speak. But they don't really talk down to kids at all.
No, they don't. And this would almost, in a weird way, be considered a very special episode. You know, the divorce one. The same as, I think, a very special episodes have issues when you come to, oh boy, you know, that on a kid's show, every now and then you got a very special episode where, like, I remember there was a mask episode where the annoying kid character, one of his friends was being beaten by his dad. It was a child abuse one. And you go, well, that breaks the fucking fantasy of battling evildoers for the end of the world, doesn't it? You kind of go, okay, that was a little jarring. Who the hell thought that was a good idea?
Well, it's not a bad idea, honestly, because this was a time when there were a lot of families, and there may be families still doing this. In fact, I'm sure there's a lot of families still doing this today, where you plop the kid in front of the television and let him be. And
this was also a victim of the 80s, where you had to have some sort of educational content before Reagan deregulated everything. But you couldn't have 30-minute toy commercials.
That's right. I can understand where it's coming from. Yeah, it's a little jarring. If you want more information on stuff like that in the very special episodes, we actually did an entire Lost in the Static on it. So,
but we didn't really talk about cartoons. We were talking about live action.
That's true.
But then you have just jarring ones like the one we're about to play. The episode had nothing to do with this. Just the little educational tag at the end was this, and this is real, people.
Shira and I want to talk to you about something that's very personal. Your body.
Remember, it's your body and no one should touch you in a way that you feel is wrong.
I'll get anybody who tries it!
It's not that easy, Orko. It's hard for a young person to admit that he or she has been touched in a bad way.
If you've been touched that way, don't be ashamed. Tell someone you trust, like your parents, your doctor, your teacher, or counselor, or your minister or rabbi.
Right, Orko?
Right on!
Yeah. That's a little, okay, isn't it?
And that was just literally tagged onto the end of one of the episodes.
Yeah, so you're having this fun, wacky adventure, Skeletor's latest scheme goes up, and then, have you been touched in a naughty place? Tag, and you go, wait, what the fuck? No!
It is a little bit jarring, but again, I'm kind of glad it's there.
Well, but on that same topic, look at like all those home videos that they had for kids at the time of, you know, you being touched or stranger danger and all that. They talked down to kids to the point where the message got lost in, wow, this was written by adults while high who thought this is what kids would respond to.
Well,
like that Gary Coleman one. I don't remember the title off the top of my head.
I
Brad did a DVD-R hell on it.
Yeah. In fact, There's a good example. My friend Matt's mom, bless her, was a good, good woman, but she was what we would call now a helicopter parent.
Oh my God, I hate that crap.
Where it was mom was always right over Matt's shoulder. It was good, it was bad, it was, you know, God forbid, because he was her first son and first child, and
she was a little clingy.
She was a little clingy. And it's that kind of parenting and that kind of parenting that my older sister got versus the kind of parenting that I got. My dad, that's one thing that I will always appreciate about him. He never really spoke down to me. If I asked him a question, he would, you know, like, how does soap work? Well, it makes water wetter. How do you make water wetter? Boom, it was a discussion, and we talked about the science between surfactants and stuff like that. And it was that kind of versus, you know, mom, how does soap work? Well, the magical cleaning fairies live in the fluid and they come along and scrub your hand and, you know, as you wash your hands.
Or God makes it.
Or yeah, and especially in Indiana.
A lot of people I went to school with, that was the explanation for science, was God did it, so that's how it works.
Exactly. And
you're just raising your kid to be an ignorant moron at that point.
Unfortunately, yes. Versus, again, and my parents weren't the only parents that did this. I know we've got listeners out there that, hell, maybe even their mom or their dad did the talking down and the God did it stuff versus their other parent, whichever, you know, whether that's mom right. or dad, had more my dad's approach. Because my mom, if she didn't want, you know, like, mom, how does sex work? Well, we're going to hem and haw and do this and go around this and whatnot. Dad, how does sex work? Well, your mother and I made love and, you know, I ejaculated a sperm in and it met her egg and it became an ovum and you grew inside of your mother and were born. And that's how sex works. You know, it's those two different approaches, even within my own household, let alone on TV where you had a lot of those straight to video, and I hate to say it, but a lot of them were put out by Christian organizations.
Yes, very much so.
Where it would be, how does sex work? Well, a man and a woman love each other very much, and they get in bed, and they lay next to one another, and then God comes along and puts a baby in the woman's belly.
I'm just picturing Mrs. Krabappel going, she's faking it. In the yeah. back corner, you know, she's faking it.
Yeah, or even as I got into my teens, Dad, how does sex work, or how can I be good at sex? Well, let's get a porno and we'll analyze. Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah, a porno is really going to, because that's a realistic depiction of sex, right?
that's you know, there was also an excuse for my dad to go, I could watch porno and use it as an excuse to explain something to my son.
Yeah, because pornos always leave out the, you know, accidentally elbowing somebody. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, all the goo after. Or, yeah, because pornos are so realistic.
Or while you're working hard, you end up farting in bed. And, oh, yeah, that's...
Well, now, I do want to talk about a different thing with kids' stuff. But I also want to talk about, real quick, because I know you want to play this clip because it's a good clip. There are sometimes jokes where you go, wait a minute, that this was in a kid's show.
Yeah.
Just play it.
Okay. Here we go. As soon as I find, there it is.
Thank you so much. Way down Jack, up on the Nile River, Jack.
I found prints.
No, 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 fingerprints.
I don't think so.
And Dot is holding Prince, and he looks at her with this kind of, oh, yeah, baby. He's got the fuck me eyes at Dot in that clip.
Oh, yeah, this was the old pre-Jehovah's Witness Prince, so.
Well, and he was still called Prince,
dressed
too.
All
wasn't
in
even
purple.
Weird
That's right.
symbol Prince. But let's spend the last 15 minutes talking about kids' movies and kids' TV, the live action, the stuff that's not supposed to be educational. Why do you think there are two different levels of these? There are way too scary and adult for intended audience, and there are da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da for kids. There rarely gets that middle ground where, A young kid can enjoy this, and a 14-year-old can also enjoy the same movie. You don't get... like a movie like Hocus Pocus. I enjoy the movie because it really just oozes Halloween, and I shouldn't like that movie, but I do. But that movie, I can understand from a marketing perspective why that movie failed. It's way too dark for little kids. I mean, you've got people using candles made out of human fat, a book bound in human blood. They're trying to eat children. They're trying to murder people. But it's also goofy and slapsticky, and she's riding on a vacuum cleaner. And how do you promote a movie like that?
Yeah, it was really confusing and difficult to promote. And then on the other end, as an example of your type deal, you've got movies like Mac and Me.
Oh, my God, yes.
Which, even young kids, because, okay, for a kick, I showed this movie to my nephew, Tony. Tony is 8. Yeah, he just turned 8.
Did even he go, this is a commercial for Coke and McDonald's?
Well, he looks at me and goes, I want McDonald's. And I said, well, that's nothing new.
That's the point.
But he also looks at me and he goes, nobody would act like that, you know. And then we got to the kid where the kid falls off the cliff on the wheelchair,
yeah.
And he's like, "He's dead." How?
Yeah,
he's
you do not.
Dead.
Even a kid's going, "You don't survive that."
Exactly, and so you know that was a great. Yes, it was a commercial for Coke and McDonald's, but it also talked down to its audience.
Mm-hmm.
Versus another example, The Explorers.
Yeah, the Joe Dante movie.
Yes. Some very dark topics are covered in there. I mean, you know, and yet at the same time, they don't talk down to kids.
No.
So.
And it gets a little goofy in the last act. But
yeah.
Fine, fair enough. Well, what about when you've got something that is meant for kids and they include a reference like your fingerprints reference where you just go, okay, you expected a kid to get that? Like, for instance, something like the Recess cartoon, the one from Nickelodeon, mm-hmm. They had a reference to scanners. It's like, yeah, because I'm sure a lot of Recess's audience really knew about that 1980 obscure David Cronenberg film where people's heads blew up, right?
Well, actually, Recess's audience may have known.
But, I mean, I've seen, like, not just the Spielberg ones, but lots of 90s cartoons would have references to Leatherface and fucking Pinhead and Jason, and it's like... Yeah, because those 8-year-olds that are your target audience, they watch those Friday the 13th films, right?
Some of them did. The other, as a more recent example, Disney does Phineas and Ferb. And there are all kinds of jokes in there, especially when they interact with their parents. And their parents are about the same age as us. And... Yeah, there are jokes and references to the 90s, and you're just like, okay, Disney, you know that mom and dad are watching along with the kids, and you just threw that in there for them, which I have no problem with a show doing because it gives, you know, if you and I go back and we watch some of those old Recess episodes or, my God, Animaniacs, we might even catch some of those references that we didn't at the time.
I brought this one up before. That Pinky and the Brain reference to the Donner Party, where they're undercover in Santa's workshop. The reindeer are throwing a party at Donner's house. The music stops. Brain just looks right at the camera. I don't revel being part of the Donner Party.
Yes.
You go, yeah, because any little kid's going to get the Donner Party joke, right?
Right. But that's what I'm saying is those are thrown in for the adults watching along. Or, like I said, for us to go back later and catch more.
Well, but you've even got some that are... Yes, there are jokes for the kids in it. Remember when the Animaniacs died, or remember technically Wacko expired and death came for them?
Yes.
That entire segment is a parody of The Seventh Seal.
Yes.
You know, that Bergman film that kids know so well, right?
That Bergman film that 30-year-olds know so well.
And you just kind of go, okay, I'm not saying this in a bad way, but who thought this was a good idea?
But it was. And yeah, there were jokes for kids, and it was still funny. And then later you learn about the Seventh Seal, and you go, oh.
That's what that was a reference to. All right.
Or, you know, in my case, later you're introduced to Orson Welles, and you're like, Brain!
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, Brain is an extended parody, especially the commercial. the commercial gone wrong.
Oh, yes.
Where they did have to change the go down on you to make cheese for you. But other than that, it's an almost word-for-word parody of the Orson Welles commercial outtake where he's fighting with his director. And you just go, yeah, because little kids, and remember, this pre-internet, so this commercial wasn't everywhere. Yeah, because little kids are going to know about that blooper that circulated at radio stations, right? And never got played on the air. You're really pegging obscure here, guys.
Yeah, but again, I appreciate that stuff, and I appreciate not being talked. You know, again, yes, it's a whole thing. Maybe the kids, the young kids, didn't get it, but they will. And because, my God, I knew about that commercial long, you know, not long after that episode, actually, because I learned about that commercial in college.
Well, but then you have other pop culture references. Like, Animaniacs had a running thing whenever they were parodying William Shatner, his toupee fell off. Because, yeah, little kids know that Shatner wears a toupee and was hiding it, right? Or they even know who the fuck William Shatner is, other than maybe he looks like Captain Kirk?
Or they really had, old. Or they had Madonna, you know, inviting...
They had a lot of Madonna.
A lot of Madonna, and she would often invite people to go play Truth or Dare.
While wearing the cone breast.
The cone boobs.
Yeah,
yes.
And all that. And just kind of, yeah. So, but you don't see that. Look at the cartoons that are coming out today. Kids cartoons. I'm not talking Adult Swim or things like that.
Right.
Or like Adventure Time and all that. I don't know if that's Adult Swim or not, but you get my point. But look at the cartoons made for kids. You go, they're talking down to you. They're treating you like you're a retard, and every single thing has to be explained to the audience so kids might not get... I can't even count how many times on a show like G.I. Joe, which is hardly highbrow, Scott, okay?
Right.
It's hardly highbrow. I can't even count how many goddamn times there are words I had to go look up.
Sure, sure.
Because you had things that... You know, you had military terms that I didn't know that I had to look up. That was on G.I. Joe and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, you had strategy that we would have to look up every now and then.
Well, and I even remember when they created Sepentor?
Yes.
In 1986?
Right. By combining the DNA of a bunch of evil people of this world, if I remember right.
And they actually went into the explanation of deoxyribonucleic acid. And I'm like, are you just making up words now? And it made me go look up what deoxyribonucleic acid was.
Sure.
And, you know, it was like, okay, these are... I don't think that was meant to be an educational moment because they're not really being scientifically accurate for anything in this, so why all of a sudden would you be? But you had these shows that they didn't talk down to you, and today I'm just looking at the ones for kids, and they're insulting. Because, like, when my niece would be over... We would watch, not Hub, the other kids one.
Sprout?
Sprout, that's it. And I'm like, you know what? She's two. And this is talking down to her. What the fuck? What is this made for kids that don't, you know, is this made for 6-month-olds? What the hell?
Well, and I guess it depends on the age that they were shooting for. Because we did have those... stupid shows that kind of talk down to kids, like Teletubbies, which I still don't think they were made for kids. I think they were made for extremely high adults.
Everyone.
What would the hell was the name of the one that followed it? Bubu or something like that?
Well, wasn't there one about like three kind of boy band looking dudes that wore classic Star Trek-y kind of outfits that sang Boogles or something?
Was the Wiggles.
Wiggles, that's what I'm thinking of.
But
okay.
No, Boobo. That was it. Boobo? Is that the one that it was by the same people that made Teletubbies, and it was even worse.
Okay, no.
I don't know. I'll look it up later. But nonetheless, but yeah, you had some shows that talked down to kids when we were growing up, and now even with my nephew, with him coming over and stuff. And watching TV, he would get bored, and we would have to, you know, I would go, and that's one thing that I'm proud of is we got him reading, because he would see that Auntie was reading and Uncle was reading stuff online, and Auntie got him reading Harry Potter by he's still working his way through the series, but he started when he was about 6 or 7.
Well, that's the other thing. When you get kids' books, now, and in this part, I'm not going to talk about kids, like little kids, because obviously you have to write to their reading level because they're still learning. Fine, fair enough. But like the recent slate, and by recent I mean a decade, of young adult novels, they had these when we were kids. Fair enough. But they were not the multi-million dollar sellers that they are now. The young adult novels, from what I understand, obviously I haven't read Hunger Games or anything, but from what I understand, they're barely young adult. That these, they have a lot of concepts and whatnot that would be in adult sci-fi.
Well,
and they don't seem to be talking down to their audience. Twilight obviously does, but Hunger Games, I've been told, the books are actually way more adult than the movies would lead you to believe they are.
Yes, they are. And the Harry Potter series as well. Even looking at the, I mean, look at the movies and how dark they went. And how,
I've only seen the first one.
Okay. They went very, very dark toward the end and everything like that. Of course, their audience kind of grew with them. But if you read the series, the Harry Potter series, there's a whole lot more relationships explored, and it's done so in a very adult way. And yeah, Hunger Games, the books are, go into the explanations of things a whole lot different than
from
the
what
movies.
I've been told, the movies basically drop all the socio-political commentary, you know, for fun.
Yes,
because they wanted to make fun movies and not movies that are actually kind of commenting on the Bush-Obama administrations.
Right, very much so. And I mean, even movies that are kind of dumb, even if we look at, say, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, yes, it's absurdity, yes, it's absurd British comedy, but there is still some commentary on British society in there. And versus a movie that you brought up earlier, Dumb and Dumber, you brought up off air, and Dumb and Dumber is absurd comedy for the sake of absurd comedy.
Some of which works, some of which does not.
Right. And then there's Dumb and Dumber-er.
Well, but then you look at something like Dumb and Dumber. That's a perfect example. Clear, most of the jokes are made for a 12 to 14-year-old. They're poop jokes. They're the kind of jokes that when you're going through puberty you find funny.
Yes, the sudden bout of diarrhea on your date.
Yes. Except then there are so many sex jokes, and if the movie is an R rating, for you're going to go, okay, so the jokes are made for 12-year-olds, but the movie's made for 17+. What's going on here? There doesn't seem to be a correlation here.
Yeah, there's that. How do you market this? And you know, if we talk about straight-to-video stuff, you have things like Movie 43.
That movie was made for nobody.
It was terrible.
Way anyone making that didn't know that this was awful on every level.
Right. It was jokes for 12-year-olds with other content for 17+.
Hard R.
Yeah.
You go, yeah, you didn't have any clue what you were doing.
Yeah. And it's, you know, what do you do with that? But that's a deal of bad writing and bad marketing. It's not really, you know, the movies don't really, well, yeah, they do. Like in Movie 43 especially, talks down to the audience.
It assumes you're stupid.
Yes.
And that's the problem.
And I think I actually did lose some intelligence watching that movie, by the way.
Yeah, I think you started typing to me, leaving out all vowels after you saw that. Like, vowels no work more. But, so we got to wrap up. Don't forget that there's the t-shirts at 1201beyond.com. There's the Adam and Eve promo static. There's the, say it,
Patreon. Yes.
Just so I didn't Decepticon that.
And again, even if it's just, you know, $1 a month, it makes it, you know, that's $1 less that we have to go and find. And that's $1 that this will not only keep Josh in a house and my bills paid, but it will advance the show, and we will do more with the show, assuming
we've got big plans. We just have funding issues.
Exactly. Big plans need big budgets. But thanks a lot for joining us, and we will see you guys next time. Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.